Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 439, update on September 11th. This is being recorded on December 22nd of 2003. WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that URL and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. In the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, there will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record program number 439 within a week or two of the airing of this broadcast. Okay, so if people find this admittedly very pedantic form of broadcasting kind of tough to digest, you have a lot of options. You can listen to your heart's delight for free on WFMU's website, either the streaming website and or the download-only website. And or you can go to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, and you can read all about it and surf some of the links to articles that are on the web, okay? All righty. Well, we're going to go to the articles that we have for tonight's broadcast, or today's broadcast. One of the things to take note of are the structural economic relationships that underlie the events of September 11th. And in that context, one should be very, very careful not to oversimplify the implications of those structural relationships. We're going to go into this more in a future fireside chat, and I'm going to ruminate about some of the economic relationships and how some of these things are being misconstrued. We're going to touch on the virulent anti-Semitism that is being used, in some cases, I think, deliberately by the Underground Reich, and in some cases, simply by well-meaning, perhaps, although not particularly well-balanced people who are utilizing what an early 20th century European observer labeled the socialism of fools, namely anti-Semitism. It's getting big, folks. It's a happening thing. And we'll touch on that later. But what's really happening is the fact that the events of September 11th are to be seen within the context of some structural economic relationships which go to the highest levels of government and corporate power in the United States. They also overlap a lot of other elements. Note here the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization that dates to the period between the world wars, and the Bush administration's ethnic outreach organization. Note also the relationship between Grover Norquist and the Islamic Institute and the targets of the March 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. Note the overlap with the Bank al-Taqwa, the financial network of the Muslim Brotherhood, and note that, as I commented on and detailed in For the Record 435, among other broadcasts, the intersection between the economic world of the Underground Reich and the economic world of the Muslim Brotherhood is in Lugano, Switzerland. And it is, frankly, upon the road to Lugano that the fate of humanity will be decided. Following is from CBSNews.com. This is from the CBSNews.com, obviously, website. This was from CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston. This is Dateline New York, December 17, 2003, headlined 9/11 chair attack was preventable. This reads in part as follows. For the first time, the chairman of the independent commission investigating the September 11th attacks is saying publicly that September 11th could have and should have been prevented, reported CBS News correspondent Randall Pinkston. Quote, "This is a very, very important part of history, and we've got to tell it right," unquote, said Thomas Keene, again quoting, "As you read the report, you're going to have a pretty clear idea what wasn't done and what should have been done," he said, again quoting, "This was not something that had to happen," unquote. Appointed by the Bush administration, Keene, a former Republican governor of New Jersey, is now pointing fingers inside the administration and laying blame. Quote, "There are people that if I was doing the job would certainly not be in the position they were in at the time because they failed. They simply failed," unquote, Keene said. To find out who failed and why, the commission has navigated a political landmine threatening a subpoena to gain access to the president's top-secret daily briefs. I think they mean briefings here. I don't think they want to gain access to the president's top-secret daily briefs, but who knows? This may be more of an undercover investigation than we anticipate. Forgive the perhaps tasteless humor, but what the heck? I guess you got to get joy where you can find it these days. Beginning again, to find out who failed and why, the commission has navigated a political landmine threatening a subpoena to gain access to the president's top-secret daily briefs. Those documents may shed light on one of the most controversial assertions of the Bush administration, that there was never any thought given to the idea that terrorists might fly an airplane into a building. Quote, I don't think anybody could have predicted that they would try to use an airplane as a missile, a hijacked airplane as a missile, said National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice on May 16, 2002. Quote, how is it possible that we have a National Security Advisor coming out and saying we had no idea they could use planes as weapons when we had FBI records from 1991 stating that this is a possibility, said Kristen Breitweiser, one of four New Jersey widows who lobbied Congress and the president to appoint the commission. The widows want to know why various government agencies didn't connect the dots before September 11th, such as warnings from FBI offices in Minnesota and Arizona about suspicious student pilots. Quote, if you were to tell me that 2 years after the murder of my husband that we wouldn't have one question answered, I wouldn't believe it, Breitweiser said. Keene admits the commission also has more questions than answers. Remains to be seen what exactly comes of this commission. It has been severely curtailed, and I would note that Thomas Keene himself has done a little bit of what I would consider at least to be backtracking in connection with his comments, basically saying that no high-level officials were implicated. I suspect that, in fact, some were, and, in fact, when one investigates the funding conduits for the Muslim Brotherhood-generated al-Qaeda, one comes not only to the highest levels of the Republican Party, but also internationally to Lugano, Switzerland. And near the end of the broadcast, we're going to take a look at Grover Norquist and his position, along with Karl Rove to a somewhat lesser extent, as the point men for the Islamo-fascist element within the Republican Party that is inextricably linked with the funding conduits for al-Qaeda, for Hamas, for September 11th, and in turn, the Republican tax-cutting efforts. In For the Record program number 412, titled, The Engineer Intends to Wreck the Train, we noted that the tax cuts, the Bush administration's tax cuts, are going to increase the publicly held U.S. national debt tenfold, and I do not think that it is altogether coincidental that we have people like Grover Norquist and Karl Rove involved with people like Talat Atmana, director of Harkin Energy. Those people are involved with the Islamist connection to the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, and I don't think it's altogether coincidental that Rove and Norquist are also involved with what is going to be catastrophic budget cutting for the United States, something that will destroy the United States more thoroughly than al-Qaeda could ever hope to do. Now, in connection with the September 11th investigation, note the following. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, November 14th of 2003. This is a New York Times story, Dateline Washington. It's headlined, White House to Edit Files 9/11 Panel Seeks. It reads in part as follows. So note this in connection with Thomas Keene's pronouncements. The commission investigating the September 11th terror attack said Thursday that its deal with the White House for access to highly classified intelligence reports would let the White House edit the documents before they were released to the commission's representatives. The agreement, announced Wednesday, has led to the first public split on the commission. Two Democrats on the 10-member panel say that the commission should have demanded full access to the intelligence summaries known as the President's Daily Brief, and that the White House should not be allowed to determine what is relevant to the investigation. An umbrella group of victims' families joined the criticism, saying the terms of the accord should be public. While panel spokesman refused again to provide the terms, its executive director acknowledged that the White House would be able to remove information from the reports unrelated to al-Qaeda and to the September 11th attacks. That's what they say. I would take that with a grain of salt if I were you. Now, I would note that one of the defendants in the lawsuit by survivors of the September 11th attacks is Prince Sultan of Saudi Arabia, along with a number of other Saudi princes. Prince Sultan's counsel is Baker Botts, the law firm of former Secretary of State James Baker, who's currently in the process or is in the position of restructuring the Iraqi debt. James Baker also was at the head of a think tank at Rice University that was pivotal in advising the Bush administration's energy policy. James Baker's law firm, Baker Botts, also is the counsel for the Carlyle Group, and I'm sure veteran listeners know what that is. I would also note that Robert Jordan, the U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia, is a former lawyer with Baker Botts. So that is a very, very important law firm indeed. And note that one of their clients, Prince Sultan, is going to be outside of the reach of the lawsuit by survivors of September 11th. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, November 16th of 2003. This is an article dateline Washington headlined, Saudi officials ruled outside of reach of U.S. Reads in part, in fact, it reads in total, Saudi Arabia's defense minister and its former intelligence chief, who have denied allegations in a $1 trillion lawsuit tying them to the September 11th attacks, are beyond the reach of U.S. courts, a federal judge ruled. The suit, filed by victims and survivors of the 2001 attacks, accused the Saudis of having long, personal relationships with Osama bin Laden and officials of the Afghan Taliban militia. The officials are the defense minister Prince Sultan and Prince Turki al-Faisal, former director of general intelligence and now the Saudi ambassador in Britain. The suit also alleged that Sultan had donated millions of dollars to Saudi charities that subsequently forwarded the money to bin Laden's al-Qaeda network and other terrorist organizations. In an order issued Friday, U.S. District Judge James Robertson ruled that his court lacked jurisdiction under both international and U.S. law and dismissed all claims against the two Saudi officials. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see whether the structural economic relationships inextricably linked with the highest levels of corporate power and also political power within the Republican Party and linked to the petroleum industry, various Middle Eastern oil-producing countries, and also to the Islamo-fascist Muslim Brotherhood. It'll be interesting to see to what extent these structural economic relationships end up obfuscating the truth concerning September 11th. So far, that has certainly been the case to a certain extent. Now, in For the Record program 433 and in For the Record program number 435, I noted that the international financial or the international regulations have so far failed to completely stem the globalized nature of terrorist funding, or then the in particular the funding for the Muslim Brotherhood. That's because the funding mechanism for the Muslim Brotherhood, other terrorist organizations, criminal organizations such as arms traffickers and drug traffickers, and multinational corporations and rich individuals seeking to elude taxes are all part of the same offshore tax havens. The Cayman Islands, the Channel Islands, Panama, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, and other places are essentially beyond political and economic regulation of individual governments, and these international financial conduits are basically the manure in which organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood and powerful corporations, both joined in the underground Reich and in the person of the Bush administration, it is those networks that provide the manure in which these very deadly and unsavory flowers flourish. San Jose Mercury News of Sunday, December 14th of 2003, had the following article by Douglas Farah of the Washington Post updating the failure to interdict the doings of Youssef Nada and Ahmed Idris Nasruddin. This is the first of three articles by Douglas Farah, either singly or in tandem with others, have authored about some of the targets, some of the institutions and individuals that were targeted by the Operation Green Quest raids of March of 2002. This again, terrorist funds still flowing despite global sanctions, by Douglas Farah of the Washington Post, from the front page of the San Jose Mercury News of Sunday, December 14th of this year. It reads in part, governments around the world are not enforcing global sanctions designed to stem the flow of money to Al-Qaeda and impede the business activity of the organization's financiers, allowing the terrorist network to retain formidable financial resources, say U.S., European, and U.N. investigators. Several businessmen designated by the United Nations as terrorist financiers, whose assets were supposed to have been frozen more than 2 years ago, continue to run vast business empires and travel freely because most nations are unaware of the sanctions and others don't enforce them, the investigators said. Several charities based in Saudi Arabia and Pakistan that were reportedly shut down by the governments there because of the group's alleged financial ties to Osama bin Laden, and skipping down in this article and in the San Jose Mercury News of 12/14, said also continue to operate freely. Filling in that sentence, several charities based in Saudi Arabia and Pakistan that were reportedly shut down by the governments there because of the group's alleged financial ties to Osama bin Laden also continue to operate freely, they said. As a result, Al-Qaeda continues to receive ample funding not only to carry out its own plots, but also to finance affiliated terrorist groups and to seek new weapons, the investigators and terrorism experts said. A report released this month by a UN panel of experts documented the continued flow of money, including drug money, to terrorist organizations, and warned that Al-Qaeda, quote, has already taken the decision to use chemical and biological weapons in their forthcoming attacks. The only constraint they are facing is the technical complexity to operate them properly and effectively, unquote, rather than a lack of means to acquire them. Quote, we desperately need to revitalize our effort to choke off terrorist financing because until we cut that off, we have not crippled Al-Qaeda's ability to attack us, unquote, said one senior U.S. official who monitors terrorist finances. Quote, we started out well, picked all the low-hanging fruit, and then, as we have squeezed, they have simply moved on to different methods, unquote. Skipping down, the investigators said some developing nations lack the resources to comply with the sanctions, while some wealthier countries don't know of the sanctions or are hampered by bureaucratic inertia. U.S. officials said that about $138 million in terrorist assets has been frozen since the attacks, and that some steps have been taken to clamp down on charities and other known terrorist funding mechanisms. Officials noted the closure of three large Islamic charities in the United States and an ongoing investigation of a group of charities and organizations in Northern Virginia. Numerous alleged sponsors of terrorism in the United States and abroad have been publicly named. Illustrating the ineffectiveness of the sanctions regime, U.S. and U.N. officials said are the joint business empires of Youssef Nader and Idriss Nasruddin, which sprawl across Europe and Africa and are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Nader, an Egyptian national who lived in Switzerland, was designated as a terrorist financier by the United Nations on November 9th, 2001, and was publicly accused by U.S. and U.N. officials of providing direct aid to Al-Qaeda. Nasruddin, an Eritrean who lives in Italy, was designated a terrorist supporter on April 24, 2002. At that time, the assets of more than a dozen of their joint enterprises were supposed to have been frozen, and a travel ban was imposed on the pair. Both men have strongly denied any involvement in terrorist activities. And again, I would note that there are very strong areas of overlap between Al-Taqwa and the financial network of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Republican Party and what I call the underground Reich. That's detailed in, among other broadcasts, FTR 433 and 435. Still more from the Washington Post of Saturday, October 18th of 2003. This is also by Douglas Farah of the Washington Post. This bringing the investigation over to this side of the Atlantic. Terror probe points to Virginia Muslims, subtitled, Local Network Provided Millions in Financing, Agency Charges. a secretive group of tightly connected Muslim charities, think tanks, and businesses based in Northern Virginia were used to funnel millions of dollars to terrorists and launder millions more, according to court records unsealed yesterday. An affidavit from Homeland Security agent David Kane said that the Safa Group, also known as the SAR Network in Herndon, had sent more than $26 million in untraceable money overseas, and that leaders to the organization, quote, have committed and conspired to provide material support to foreign terrorist organizations, unquote. The probe of the Herndon groups is the largest federal investigation of terrorism financing in the world, authorities have said, and the unsealing of Kane's report marks the first time the government has alleged the main purpose of the Virginia organizations, set up primarily with donations from a wealthy Saudi family, that, by the way, is the Al-Rajis, was to fund terrorism and hide millions of dollars. Kane said the convoluted nature of the myriad financial transactions and the fact that much of the money was sent to tax havens with bank secrecy laws makes it impossible to trace the final destination of much of the money. But he said the pattern of the money's movement, coupled with the association of leaders of the Safa group with suspected terrorists, were strong indicators the group was financing terrorism. Skipping down. The affidavit charges that overlapping companies in the Safa group were deliberately set up to layer or obscure the final destination of millions of dollars that moved in complicated transactions among organizations led by the same small group of people. It details how from 1996 to 2000, charities in the Safa group raised $54 million and that $26 million of that was sent to the Isle of Man, a known tax haven where bank secrecy laws make it impossible to trace the final destination of the money. About $20 million went to Safa group charities, and $8 million went to people and groups outside the organization, according to the group's own Internal Revenue Service filings. And by the way, among those, Grover Norquist's Islamic Institute, very closely linked not only to the Republican Party, but to the Bush administration in particular. One of its founding directors was Talat Altman of the BCCI milieu, a director of Harkin Energy, one of George W.'s oil companies. Talat Altman interceded with the former Treasury Department chief, Paul O'Neill, on April 4th, of 2002, about 2 weeks after the March 20th, 2002 raids. That can be accessed, that information, in For the Record Program 356. Returning to the Washington Post story of October 18th, the purpose of all the transactions, Kane said, is, quote, to route money through hidden paths to terrorists and to defraud the United States by impeding, impairing, obstructing, and defeating the lawful government functions of the IRS, unquote. In a 5-year period, four groups in the network sent more than $26 million to the Isle of Man. The initial money to set up the Safa group was $3.4 million hand-carried in 1980 from Saudi Arabia by Ibrahim Hasaballah, Kane said. The heart of the network in the early years was the SAR Foundation, named for Suleiman Abdul Aziz Raji. Note the name Ibrahim Hasaballah, we're coming back to that in just a minute, skipping down. The affidavit alleges leaders of the Safa group knowingly supported the Islamic Resistance Movement, or Hamas, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or PIJ, both designated terrorist entities by the United States in 1995. Senior investigators said leaders of the Safa group also put millions of dollars into banks and companies that financed Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda organization. In the past month, two individuals with ties to the Safa group have been in federal court. On October 9th, Suleiman S. Bihari, who handled investments for some of the leaders of the Safa group, was convicted on two counts of immigration fraud. He awaits sentencing, and prosecutors have requested he receive 10 years in prison because of allegations that Bihari's company was used to fund terrorism, parenthetically also linked to Youssef Nada and Ahmed Idris Nasruddin. Next name here, Abdurrahman Alamoudi, represented basically by lobbyist Grover Norquist. Here is one of the concrete links between this network and the GOP's ethnic outreach organization and beyond that, the Bush administration. Abdurrahman Alamoudi, a well-known leader of the American Muslim community who also led several organizations in the Safa group, was arrested earlier this month on charges of illegally traveling to Libya. He is being held without bail pending his trial, and prosecutors successfully argued for his detention without bail on grounds that he was financing terrorists. And the name Ibrahim Issa Hasaballah is very, very interesting. We're jumping back to an item that we looked at in For the Record program number 382, titled The Untouchables, this from late 2002. Another article, this one, also by Douglas Farah and John Mintz of the Washington Post. This is titled U.S. Trails Virginia's in Muslim. Actually, I'm going to do a little scrolling right up here, and I'm going to tell you exactly what that article is called. That article is titled, again, from the, it's called U.S. Trails Virginia Muslim Money and Ties by Douglas Farah and John Mintz, Washington Post, October 7th of 2002. A little over-the-counter radio here, but that is the precise reference. Now, noting in that, Ibrahim Hasaballah, one of the names that links the milieu of Operation Green Quest to Al-Taqwa, people like Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi and the Islamic Institute link it to the Bush administration and to the GOP. And beyond, in the background of this, of both the Bush administration and the Muslim Brotherhood, the Underground Reich. Quoting from the Washington Post article of October 7, 2002, investigators said they have also uncovered numerous ties between SAR entities and the bank Al-Taqwa. Samir Salah, a founder of the Safa Trust, SAR's successor and an officer of other SAR companies, helped establish Bank Al-Taqwa in the Bahamas in the mid-1980s, according to a Treasury document. In a letter to the Washington Post, Salah said he had no role with the bank. Ibrahim Hasaballah, another officer of some SAR-related companies, also helped set up Bank Al-Taqwa in the Bahamas, according to the document. Hasaballah did not respond to numerous requests for comment. In addition to the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood is a very powerful organization and overlaps some very powerful interests, not only in the Middle Eastern oil-producing countries, but in other Muslim countries around the world. In light of the fact that, too, it's completely unknown. Most people know nothing about it. And in light of the fact that it is an outgrowth of the Underground Reich and some of its manifestations, the Muslim Brotherhood is an organization that is very problematic because of the fact that it has a very significant role within the international Muslim community. And many Muslims of good faith, do not realize the fascistic nature of the Muslim Brotherhood. Some of its ideology is discussed in For the Record 343, and other aspects of its ideology are reviewed in For the Record 435, The Road to Lugano. We're going to turn now to the book Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States in Islam, authored by Richard LaBaviere and published by the Algora Press in 2000 in English. By the way, this was before September 11th, well before it, of a fellow named Youssef Al-Qaradawi and his relationship to Bank Al-Taqwa. We read, an advisor who insisted on anonymity would later provide me with a confidential list of the founders of the bank and the first shareholders. I thus learned that the president of Al-Taqwa's Office of Religious Control is Dr. Youssef Al-Qaradawi. Regarded as the theorist behind Islamic international finance, he is famous throughout the Arab world for the radical sermons which he gives regularly on the national television station of Qatar, where he is living in exile. Perhaps I should have been called Air Qatar. I don't know. Continuing, excuse me, bad joke. This confidential list also mentions several eminent personalities of the Tunisian and Syrian Muslim Brothers, as well as leaders of the International Organization of the Fraternity or Muslim Brotherhood. Again, an advisor who insisted on anonymity would later provide me with a confidential list of the founders of the bank and the first shareholders. I thus learned that the president of Al-Taqwa's Office of Religious Control is Dr. Youssef Al-Qaradawi. More about Dr. Qaradawi and his connection with the founding of mosques in the United States on the other side of this broadcast. But this concludes Side A of For the Record program number 439. Update on September 11th, being recorded on December 22nd of the year 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.